is where it's except it's packed into one. Where we're covering that whole biblical narrative timeline, again, packed into one class here, but with that focus being on the dating. So, and also, you know, as we go through these slides, some of them will be maps, so we'll be covering the maps as well. So the intention for this class, at least in my mind as I see it, is to be a reference class. So what I mean by that is the dates we're talking about, the slides that we're going to be using, they all go along with the timeline that Bob and Sandra have in their book that we're using in Lesson 8. So, you know, this is intended to be a reference to go along with that. We're not going to cover every detail. We're not covering every date. And we're really not even doing line item dates. We're more doing periods of time that certain things and events are going to fall. So spans of time. So the intent is not, you know, not to soak this all up in one class, but to have something to go back and reference to. And, you know, and also in my mind too, when I think about this, I'm looking to give the information that for the, you know, maybe opening one or two slides you might be using for a class or comments you might be making at the beginning of a class or somewhere in the middle or closing it out. Just helping to have these dates, time periods, and the events that go along with it to reference, you know, just shortly as you're covering the narrative cycle. But we're going to be covering a lot of ground, a lot of information this morning, so it's going to be a lot packed in here for this summary. So something I would also recommend is reading this Lesson 8 in the book. So on dating Bible events, it's very helpful to get a sense for how biblical dating works and how it doesn't work, and also how you know, you can relate to secular historical timelines and events, you know, back and forth between, and just some good ways and things to do with it, and then some things not to do with it. But and I won't really try to summarize that, you know, what they said in that lesson. It's about 3 pages. It's a very good read, very helpful. But what I will say, or actually taking one quote from, I think there's a couple of key takeaway quotes in that lesson, but this is one. And they said, our emphasis in this study will be on the order of events, not the precise year it occurred. And you'll see as we go through this, that's a good way to approach this. So not necessarily looking for precise years, especially in the earlier stuff, because it's either difficult or sometimes impossible to do. But as you get on down in the timeline, especially down toward New Testament times, you can start reconstructing a dating timeline that can be very accurate to the year. So this might sound kind of like flip-flopping back and forth a little bit. So with that said, you know, we are trying to put dates with things, but again, it's those ranges, not necessarily extremely precise years. So so as I mentioned, the layout of the slides, they're all going to kind of look like this. So we're going to have the dates up in the top left, of course, for this one, we have question marks, and we'll talk about that. But the Bible events, and then what's happening in the world. And with this one, there is text on the right side, just because of the way how we really don't have dating to work with here, this particular topic. but to get started here, so in the beginning, so we have creation, we have the first sin, the first people groups, the flood. This is those initial things in that before the flood or the flood time periods. And so with that, what we have is the biblical text, right? So we have creation, we have Adam and Eve in the garden, first sin, Cain and Abel, and then bookended at the end of that by generations. And so, you know, part of what we're looking at on that right side there is also kind of that three-layer and three-cycle approach of major points before the flood, but then those sub-points that are kind of layer two, but then also getting into layer three with the scriptures that go with it as well. And so, and then for the flood, instructions for the ark, flood coming, flood receding, God making a covenant with Noah, and again, generations. And so it's kind of a pattern there with the generations bookending these. but for this first one, I mean, and when I was thinking about this first slide and looking at it, I thought, okay, so in my mind, when I look at this, I see I see question marks, because, and we'll get into some of this and when we cover this this period in particular in the more detailed classes, but in my mind, I see question marks when it comes to the dating. Again, there are things mentioned, dates and years mentioned with people's generations and things like that, but actually how you pinpoint starting points and reference points is something that can be, again, difficult, if not impossible to do with the very early timeline stuff. So, you know, I kind of wondered what Bob and Sandra, before I looked in the book on this, I kind of wondered how they handled it. And I looked, and they also have question marks as well. So at least we're kind of thinking along the same line there. But for this period, we actually do have one map that works very good for this period. Anybody know what this is a map of? Anybody? I don't think I heard it. This is a map of the flood, right? All right, so to actually get started dating. So the Bible event I have listed here is Tower of Babel. And so we'll have a couple of slides on this. But we're looking back to 3500, 2500 BC time frame. So, mid-third millennium starting into mid-fourth. And so with world events, we're looking at world cultures. So we have early Sumerians, early Egyptians. At this time, you would also have Canaanites that would already be in the land of Canaan as well. And something called ziggurat culture, and I have a slide for that, and talk about that in just a minute as well. But in the transition from Genesis 10 to 11, so we go from the covenant story with Noah in the flood, and then the covenant at the end, and then we swap to the Tower of Babel story. And so this is a transition. Just like we transition from the creation story to the flood, this is another transition in the storyline. And so in what we usually note, this period being where we have the Tower of Babel in the three-cycle outline approach, is the scattering of the people. And, after looking at these slides late last night and then thinking about it again this morning, probably should have had like a progress bar at the top. So this will come as a teaser for the next iteration of these slides. Like maybe a progress bar at the top that would show the 17 periods and where we're going with that. And, a lot of it you can get and see and understand, but that visual would probably help as well. But yeah, so scattering of the people is where this would be, if we're talking about Tower of Babel, obviously. So here again, so we don't have very specific things here. We do have these world civilizations early that we do have the beginnings of documented history on, but not very many specific things that we can work from a dating perspective. But there is one thing that we can use that may help understand a little bit about what's going on here. And so in what we have here, and if we're thinking about this mid-third millennium, we have some of the oldest Mesopotamian civilizations who developed writing systems. And so Sumerian and Akkadian empires are two of the primary ones in this time frame, say 3200 to 2300 BC. But Sumer is the oldest collective Mesopotamian civilization, and they invented a system of writing known as cuneiform, or script, the script of cuneiform, around 3000 BC. So a little bit later, around 2500 BC, so we have the Akkadian language, which adopted cuneiform. So Akkadian language, but they adopted the script as cuneiform to use to write it out, which became essentially the standard language throughout the ancient world for a very long time, from this time period to about the 8th, as in 800-ish century BC, 700 BC. So that was eventually replaced by Aramaic, predominantly, but Akkadian was continued to be used as what you would say was a scholarly language at the time up until the first century AD. So this is a language that may have had variations between different countries and cultures, but for the most part, it was steady for a few thousand years. And then what I have listed at the bottom here, we'll talk about in the next slide, the ziggurat culture. So. And you may have seen pictures of these before. Maybe it's something you're familiar with or read about, or maybe have no idea about it. So I'll just kind of cover these generally and what we think they are or may be and how it may relate a little bit to the Tower of Babel story. So the first note on this is to understand something I'm not saying about this. So I'm not saying the Tower of Babel was a ziggurat, not saying that definitively. So just to point that out up front. But there could be some things here with what these are, how they're constructed, some things about what they were used for that could bear some resemblance or, could maybe help us what Genesis 11 was about or what the people were doing there. And so with some of these points I'll be making, taking most of this information from the Zondervan Illustrated Bible Backgrounds Commentary, this is by an Old Testament and Genesis scholar. His name is John Walton. And in his research in presenting this in that Zondervan reference book, he also references a number of textual and archaeological people who would, you're not really digging these things, right? They're already above the ground, but digging in and around them and trying to determine, what the structures were used for as much as you can from either digging or examining the structures, and then also textual scholars, because there are some texts from this period that describe these things and give us their individual names and things like that that can help us to understand some things about them. So one of the first points with these is that so they resemble pyramids, but they are not a pyramid and not constructed like a pyramid was. So and the main point with that is they're not tombs. It's not a tomb. So it's actually a completely filled, packed with dirt, and it has a mud brick facade. So mud brick is one of your common construction materials that you'll have in the Mesopotamian area because there's lots of mud. Not much stone, but there is mud, and you can make mud bricks from that. So these were dedicated to particular deities. And a deity could have multiple ziggurats, and also a town could have multiple, a town or city could have multiple ziggurats as well. The main feature on these guys that you can see, pretty prominent there in the reconstruction drawing, and then also in the actual one here we're looking at. So they were either staircases or ramps that went up to a small room on the top. And so, and that's where, It was a space, a sacred space, a space for a deity up there. So a number of the ziggurats, and so you know that name we're using is just a general name for them, but they would have an ancient text that records some details about them. They would have specific names per ziggurat. And so what's interesting about some of those names and what they mean is that the names seem to indicate that they were stairways, they were portals, they were a medium by which the god could go back and forth between the heavenly realm and then the earthly and human realm. And so, you know, when you think about all this, and this is just a general high-level summary of it, you know, some things that you might could piece back together with the Tower of Babel is this concept of, you know, building something high enough to touch the heavens. So not in the sense that it's extremely high, like hundreds or thousands of feet high, but just something high enough that elevates you, but then it serves a function at that elevation, you know, at that level where the deity would reside, that it's giving you this portal or communication way to the heavens and to deities. You know, another thing about making a name, which was mentioned in the Genesis 11 account. So, you know, there could be some indications there that trying to make a lasting name and try to have some permanence to that, that culture, the people who come after the ones who built this, there could be some worship back to that. So just a couple of thoughts there on how you know, these things could, that they did, especially these cultures relate to deities, communication between earth and heaven, things like that. And so again, not saying that's what the Tower of Babel was, but just saying there were things like this in this time frame, very long time ago, some of the first recorded history stuff that we have, that, you know, could have shed some light on what Genesis 11 may be doing as well, and the people there. But this particular ziggurat is the Great Ziggurat of Ur. So it's a 21st century BC ziggurat built by Ur-Nammu, who has the first known law code. So a lot of times you think of law codes in these time frames, and we'll talk about Hammurabi a little bit, but he had the first known law code, and this was to honor Nana, which was a moon god. This ziggurat was actually restored because it had been destroyed or partially destroyed and then restored in the 6th century BC by the Neo-Babylonian king Nabonidus, which was Nebuchadnezzar's father, so another name that you'll recognize. And funny enough, it was also restored in the 1980s, like our 1980s, by Saddam Hussein. So, you know, Nabonidus and Saddam Hussein working on the same projects. Also with this time frame, something that I hope you can just get a sense for in these pictures, you may not be able to see some of it very well, but just the art and culture that the people of this time had. You know, and if we're thinking, you know, 2500, we're looking at potentially what we probably think would be about 1,000 years before Abraham. So if you're looking at and thinking about these cultures and some of the things they had, like gold, lapis lazuli headdresses, which would be like what's depicted there, and cuneiform tablets. And so that's actually, not sure how well you can see that. For those in the back, you could probably actually turn around and see it better on the big monitor there. But cuneiform tablets, so the wedge-shaped writing made with like a little stylus where you would push to make the cuneiform markings. And so that just kind of gives you a look and feel for, you know, all art and culture that these civilizations would have had even here at this time. All right, so now we're going to move down the line a little bit, 2000 to 1500 BC. And so the things that we have here, so from the Bible timeline events, we have Abraham leaving Ur, so Ur being down right there, so leaving Ur and going to be making that trek across the Fertile Crescent into Israel. And of course, you know, and Haran also up in this area. So typical common travel route was around the Fertile Crescent because you weren't going to cross the Arabian Desert, which, I mean, you could, but you really don't want to, right? Be a very difficult trip. So that's the typical travel route you would have. And also in this time frame, we have Joseph getting down into Egypt, and you also have the Israelites in slavery in Egypt. And if we're thinking about world events there and different civilizations, so you'll have names that you recognize from the biblical text, such as the Amorites, Hittites, Egyptians, and they and these are all conducting trade in Mesopotamia as well. We mentioned Hammurabi just a moment ago, so most people, you know, from your history classes or popular history sources, History Channel and stuff like that, you know, that's a name you recognize, Hammurabi and his code, the representative law code that he had. So also things you have in this period is Western Semitic people in Israel, in Egypt. So people from that general area of what we think of as Israel being over in Egypt as well. There are some records of that. And one thing I'll talk about in just a minute is some trade routes. And so one very specific one from Asher to Qanish. And yeah, so we'll go ahead and talk about that now. So I have a description about this particular trade route. And so where we are, so Asher, right there. So about middle central Mesopotamia, Qanish is up here, modern day Turkey, but in the Anatolian Peninsula there. So we're gonna talk about a trade route that runs there. So this is a description from the 2000 BC to 1500 BC timeframe. So this where this is from that I'm gonna read, the context of it is it's a research paper about production of ancient tin and tin sources. So tin was a critical ingredient for producing bronze and was sourced in very few places in antiquity. And ancient writings from this period in Qanish, so the site that's up there, reveal about some of this trade that was going on at this time on this route. And even talks about, you'll see here, some like husband and wife business teams running trade along this route. I just want to read this. The first two cities paired together, Asher and Qanish. These two cities share a connection in trade, preserved in the text found at Qanish. Trade relations are documented as early as Erishim II of Assyria, with documents found discussing trade of gold, silver, gold, and tin. Wording in some of these texts indicates that trade of some items, such as tin, were not traded as final transactions at Asher, but that Asher was a gathering point for the goods moving north to the region of Anatolia. So meaning that, you know, they gather and trade it here, but the intent is not to sell it there, but to move it north into Qanish. So Wienhoff, a scholar, cites a number of sources which recreate the caravans and trade routes of this Asher to Qanish connection. From prices to taxation and sale, smuggling routes, which is in quotes, issues of transporter donkeys, to issues of market supply and demand, the details of the trade are somewhat reminiscent of modern trade systems of transport, taxation, and tariffs of modern times. Also comparable to modern times are routes discussed which could avoid certain taxations or issues of logistics and travel, and choosing certain paths to avoid cities, certain cities or regions. Details of family business in this trade are recorded, and strife between husbands and wives bear out in the text. Some wives complain of a lack of resources, occasionally even food for the family, and husbands would complain concerning the quality of products produced by their wives. You know, so one thing you can see from that is stuff really never changes, right? Each of these facets in the Asher to Qanish trade route contribute to a picture of ancient trade and that is active and alive with business, resources, supply and demand, communications, and trade agreements. With this kind of activity, semblances of stability must have existed, albeit it is certain that general shifts of alliances and power would have provided times of instability But overall, this trade goes on for some years. Seemingly, trade was conducted in capitalistic fashion, or at least free circulation and unrestricted barter of items outlasted many of the rulers that came and went along this trade route during the early second millennium. Okay, so why am I reading this, and how does this connect? Just what I wanted to give a picture of here is this active trade route going on between these two locations at this time period. Think about the orbit that we're in. Think about these travel routes. And when we think about Abraham going from here, traveling to here, and also stopping in Haran as well. So just to kind of give you a sense that there was travel and trade going on at this time, and if you take someone like Abraham, and then again, when we get to the detail classes on this, we'll talk a little bit more about this, but how this does fit a template for people traveling in this area and trading at this time as well. So it fits very well that you would have someone traveling in this area and then easily coming and looping back around to the land of Israel if they had a reason to and were directed to. Okay. Moving down to 1500 to 1000 BC. So from a biblical timeline perspective, in this relatively short amount of years, things get really busy. So we have the Exodus from Egypt. We're coming out of Egypt. We have the invasion and conquest, period of the Judges, and the United Kingdom. So a lot going on here from a biblical timeline perspective. But in world events, what things do we have there? So we have the Hyksos ruling in Egypt, and so that some of those Western Semitic people that we mentioned that would be over in Egypt having a presence there. You have minor Assyrian kingdoms prominent in Mesopotamia. So, you know, this is a time where Assyria is not dominating yet, but they are certainly in the Mesopotamian region, and they're coming up and coming to power. Also, some other names that you'll recognize from the Bible as well, in the Aram and Tyre area, so which is not on this map here, but the coast of Tyre up in this area, from where that map would be. You have kingdoms of Hadarezer and Hiram, which is again name that we see in the biblical text. And so same slide here, just with a different image, just to give you a visual for some of the nations and people groups. So this is a 1500-ish time frame map. So Mitanni was one of the kingdoms there. But, so at this time, and as you get a little bit further down the timeline, you have Assyria coming to power, as we mentioned in here. Of course, Babylon at this time was a pretty small area. And you have Egypt. And something very common with Egypt over time as well is that you would have times where they would come up and have control in the region of Israel, and it would wax and wane, where you had the dynasty periods in Egypt and intermediate periods that would flux back and forth with how much power that Egypt had at this time. Okay, 1000 to 721. So, and some of these dates you're going to start to recognize, right? So 721 BC, but so, somebody tell me what 721 BC, what happens there with that year? Yeah, so it's Israel being taken away into Assyrian captivity. So from a Bible event perspective, so United Kingdom, Divided Kingdom, we'll have a note about Jehu here in a moment. And then looking at the world events happening here. So Assyria is more prominent now in Mesopotamia, especially as we get to that 721 date, right? Because they come in and take the northern kingdom into captivity. But some other things you have is over in the Mediterranean area. Now, very early for Rome, but Rome is starting to have its foundings during this time as well. And again, in the Aram and Damascus area, Haziel is king. Also, if we look at Mesopotamian and Persian rulers, Tiglath-Pileser III, Shalmaneser, and also Sargon II, some more names that you'll see in the Old Testament as well. And same content, just the views there of United Kingdom and then what all David did eventually conquer, and then when the kingdom divides. So that split between northern Israel and the Judean area. And so, you know, all that happening and with the 721 date, this split happening at the end of this time frame. So just want to make a brief reference to this object. And so this is the black obelisk of Shalmaneser III. You'll read about this in some of Bob's other books as well. What this is a very good anchor and timeline point, and so you can kind of read about what it is there, but it's a dedication inscription commemorating the deeds of Shalmaneser III, obviously, and it tells a little bit about where it was found there, close to modern-day Mosul, Iraq. What's significant about this is the panel, this second panel. So in the second panel, not sure how well you can see that there again, you might be able to look back and see it better on that screen, but so what you have here is an image, or what's thought to be an image of Jehu, or one of his representatives. And so the inscription, and that's pretty small, and I don't expect you to be able to read that, but the inscription itself says, "I received tribute of Jehu." And so, and it doesn't, there's a few things that it doesn't say to help give you a timeline, but there's another text that's referenced here that gives us that this was happening in the 18th year of Shalmaneser the third. And part of the quote is that at that time he received tribute from different groups, but it mentions Jehu in this other text. So this is one of those points, a very good anchor point. There are some things that come before this from an archaeological and text perspective that can give you some dates, but this is a really key one, especially for the time periods that we'll be studying, that that really helps solidify. So you know, you can put this stake in the ground at 840, 841, 2-ish, and work back to the left on the timeline with that, but then also work down to the right as well. So this is one of those good anchor points for dating. Okay, so as we continue down, 721 to 586. And so 721, we said, was where Israel, the northern kingdom, was taking capital. And then 586, what's the 586 date? Which is up there on the screen. Yeah, so it's where Jerusalem falls to Babylon on the last incursion where it actually fell. But Bible events we have here, of course, at the beginning of this time frame, Samaria falling to Assyria, Babylon via Nebuchadnezzar, so he's invading and taking over lots of areas, but here in Israel as well. And then Jerusalem is falling. And really, the timeline here for world events, and you know, I don't think I said this earlier, but I meant to. So when I say world events, obviously we're not talking about world events that's like on the other side of the world, saying world, but in this region. But at this time, with these activities, you're pretty much seeing a mirror of that right there. It's what's happening in the region at the time. Now, as we do move a little bit further in time from the last slide, you do have different rulers with Mesopotamia and Persia, other names that you'll recognize in the Bible and from secular history as well, like Sennacherib, Esarhaddon, Assurbanipal, Nabopolassar, and of course Nineveh being a city, not a person, but it, Nineveh eventually falls to the capital of Assyria. And also still make a reference to, you have Greek and Roman foundations continuing to grow over in the Mediterranean this way. So and you can see Greece there in this image. Okay, and those two might just showing the difference between the Assyrian, the extent of the Assyrian Empire, and then the extent of the new Babylonian Empire, because there was an old Babylonian Empire as well. Okay, and one more slide on this time period. And so this is just another piece, again, that helps with dating and also kind of gives us a sense for, seeing, images or pictures. As much as we can have pictures from this time period, kind of like the black obelisk with the picture of Jehu. So I don't know how well you can see this, and if we're talking Bible events, so Samaria falls to Assyria at the beginning of the time frame, but this would be the Assyrian siege, when Assyria is still in control, in their siege of Lachish. So, they had to build a siege ramp to get up to the city, and when they did that, they would actually take siege engines. So think what you'd like to see in some movies like Lord of the Rings kind of stuff. I don't think this one had like a warthog head on the front that they were bashing with it. But that's a siege engine. Like you can see the wheels right there. And then things extending from it. So this is, something they use to attack Lachish with. So these reliefs, it's a panel of reliefs that are actually in the British Museum now. And again, helps with, visualizing things, but also dating as well. And so, one comment here is, so this is one of Scott's slides from his last lesson. So you know, one thing that he really wasn't doing, so he did some in here, he did mention some dates in here, but for the most part, you know, covering that was hitting everything on the left side on the timeline there and then giving more detail to it in this cycle two concept. But, you know, right now what we're talking about with the slides we just covered, so we're looking at Judah alone, Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel being taken away. We're looking at the captivity. So, you know, and again, that's where I kind of like to have maybe that timeline bar across the top of my slides where it could kind of show where these things fall in this. But a lot of it, you see the events and you kind of know, and I'm using some of the names that look familiar too. But so just keep in mind that the idea is to reference and map these back to, you know, these time frames back to, you know, this list of events. Okay, as we move on down to 600s BC to 400s, so Bible events that we have there, so you have Babylonian captivity. When that ends, you have the returns that start, so names like Zerubbabel and Nehemiah, Zerubbabel returning to build the temple, Nehemiah returning to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. You have the temple completed during that time frame, and then we also have the last prophets that there would be. So with this, so you have Persia being in power, especially up to the beginning of this, and where it allowed people to return to their homelands, and we'll talk about that more on the next slide. And then we also have Persian kings' names that you would recognize also. So Xerxes, Artaxerxes, and you know, the famous king Darius, or Darius, famous for, which way do you pronounce his name? Because everybody always does it different. So one note here that I want to look at in this artifact, and this one's a very popular artifact. You've probably seen or heard about this before. But this is, it's a inscription in Akkadian, in cuneiform script, Akkadian language, cuneiform script, that is the Persian king of Cyrus the Great. And so this is Cyrus the Great's inscription where he directs people who were captive to return to their homelands, or gives them the permission and ability to return to their homelands. And so that just kind of fits in with the return periods there. Okay, and so as we move down to the 400s to right around the AD swap over, so 4 to 6 BC. So with Bible events that we look at here, so no recorded events, right? So this is typically what we call the years of silence, years of biblical silence. Obviously, things are still going on. And particularly with the Jewish people, you know, they still have their life that they're living and the things that are going on with them. And what you will have during this time period where there's no recorded biblical events, you have Persian control at the beginning. You have Greek and Hellenistic control that comes in later. And you also have the Maccabean Revolt, so that's something that you hear about pretty common from historical sources in this time period, which leads to the Hasmonean Kingdom. And then also you have Roman control. So these are all, again, not actual Bible events, but the things that are happening to the Jewish people at this time. This is also another slide where you have where the two lists are essentially a mirror of each other, right? Because what's being experienced here is what is going on in the region at this time. So you have the Persian periods, again, allowing that return. Hellenistic, which is Alexander the Great, running around conquering everything. That's a picture of him there. Also a picture of his horse, Bucephalus, because why would you not name your horse Bucephalus? And then the, again, Hasmonean Kingdom, world event, but you have that from the catalyst for that is the Maccabean Revolt that happens, and then Roman control as well. And this is just an image, and I know it's not very big, hard to see, but you can see the red lines there of Alexander's first major set of conquest, and then where he rode Bucephalus all the way to India to take over everything there in a pretty short order. But this is getting us down to that transition point of BC to AD time frame, so down to the birth of Christ. Oh, and this is just one image of the Hasmonean conquest that we mentioned a couple times on the left over there, of the different ways that Judah was split up with the Hasmonean rulers. And the view of Babylon, Rome. So, you know, at the end, at this time frame, you have Rome taking control of most all of the edges of the Mediterranean. Okay, and we're going to run through 0 to 100 AD in about 2 or 3 minutes, right? So with this, this is also very much like the slide earlier where we had so many biblical events packed into a short amount of time. You've got the birth and life of Christ, early church, letters to the Christians. So think about that main narrative time frame. But what do you have from a world event perspective here? So you have Herod the Great in power, and won't take time to talk about each one of these now, but Herod, some monumental structures all around Jerusalem. So it's very evident when you go there. This is the Herodium, his palace that was close to Jerusalem. He had a number of other palaces. This one is Masada, down close to the Dead Sea. We saw that in some of the images from our previous classes. But then also the temple and temple mount. So the temple mount being this area, and some of you will recognize this area in picture. Monumental construction by Herod. And there's just a picture of some of the, so Western Wall is right there. And so these are blocks in the Western Wall. And Pope Francis there, the only reason I included that picture was because just to have a reference for how big some of the stones are there. I don't know if you can see the outline of that stone, but very, very large. Very much a Pope-sized stone there. So, but this is, birth of Christ to 50 AD, and then the different world events happening there. And to end this up quickly, 50 to 70 AD. So this will be Paul's journeys that are happening, first, second, and third journeys, and which is the third journey that's depicted in that map there. And of course, the first journey being just look more to this area here. But also New Testament letters are written, and then Paul's journey to Rome, which is depicted here, and that's the other main map that we've been using. And so Rome continues to dominate. You see some names in this time frame like Nero, familiar with from persecution of Christians, Festus in Judea, another name we see in the Bible, the Roman persecution that continues, and then the destruction of Jerusalem. And very quick, just to wrap this up, 70 AD to 100 AD. So have the prophecy, and of course, with the 70 AD, actually it happening with the destruction of Jerusalem. The Gospel of John would be during this time, and then John writing Revelation as well. And so continued with Rome, Vesuvius erupts, so that's another good volcanoes erupting like that are other good time frame markers. And then other emperors of Rome that come, like Trajan. And that's it. Perfect timing.